Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your co-host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by an aerial suspended Aaron Ross cardboard cutter edition and Gabriel Moncayo, the founder and CEO at Always Hire. Welcome to the show. Thanks, Gabe.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to talk about sales and other related topics today.
Right on. So today we're going to be diving deep into how Gabe changes up his playbook across different markets. So this would be especially interesting if you're maybe running a team or if you're an account exec or SDR that might be targeting, you know, SMB, mid-market, enterprise. You might have a little bit of both. Your teams haven't specialized yet. How did you come across, you know, realizing that you needed to change your approach for each of these markets, Gabe?
Yeah, it really came initially from trial and error and trying to succeed as an individual contributor. I actually started my career doing consumer sales in the nonprofit world and then transitioned to corporate sales and small business and eventually into larger mid-market and enterprise opportunities. And just to be very transparent, it was always kind of hard for me to ramp up. And it's because I wasn't applying unique tactics and best practices based on the markets. And after enough times failing early on, I realized that there are a lot of transferable skills and a lot of transferable parts of the playbook, but it is a little bit of a different game. So it was through trial and error and really trying to maximize my results at each role.
Cool. Because especially if you're trying to, you know, if you're reading all the playbooks on, you know, account-based marketing or account-based sales development, and you're trying to apply them to, say, an SMB market where you need to be making, you know, you need to be fairly cold call heavy, your buyers aren't on social media, how's that going to work for you?
Yeah, it's not going to work for you at all. I mean, it's going to, you might put up a lot of activity metrics, so to speak, but when those activity metrics don't convert into outcomes that you're looking for, it's going to start to draw a lot of frustration. So that's likely what would happen.
So let's jump into the segments. How do you sort of segment it in your mind? I know I mentioned SMBs, you know, how do you see that sort of breakdown?
Yeah, so typically the three markets that people are selling into are either the small business market, and SMB stands for small to medium sized businesses. There's also the mid market. And then there's also the holy grail of sales, as people often say, enterprise market. So those are the three markets that people are typically selling into.
Gotcha. And help us define these, because I think everybody, and it's okay that everybody has different definitions. This is going to be unique to your business. But, you know, how do you see SMB, mid-market, and enterprise in terms of, you know, deal size?
Got it. Yeah. How do we segment them? So small business is typically, if you're on a subscription basis, a small business sale is typically going to be $0 to $500 a month on a subscription. Mm-hmm. When you're going up to mid-market, you're probably at $501 all the way up to around $2,000 a month in subscription. And then once your subscription deals are over $2,000 a month, you're starting to tackle the enterprise market.
By enterprise, we're talking, you know, more complex sales process. Like in the SMB, we're probably talking like a one call close kind of deal.
Yeah. So the small business, you're going to be doing a lot of calls. You're going to be dealing with a different type of buyer, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit. But yeah, so small business is going to be very high on the call volume, likely 100 calls, maybe 20 emails a day. And a lot of those emails are just going to be based on follow-ups or sending terms and things like that. Now, if you go into the enterprise side of the market, you're not making 100 cold calls a day. But you likely are sending hundreds of emails a day. And in following up with those emails, you're going to be making probably around 20 calls as people are picking up. So it kind of flips. And then when you're dealing with mid-market, you're right in the middle. So a mid-market rep is likely going to make around 60 calls a day. They're probably also going to be doing around 50 to 75 emails a day.
Gotcha. So on the 0 to 500, we're kind of talking about, this is like Yelp, Groupon's playbook.
Yeah, exactly. So if you go into a Yelp organization or if you go into a Groupon organization that are selling to small businesses, you're going to see that they're really heavy on call volume, and they're going to have a lot of software tools that accelerate the calling process for their reps to create efficiency.
Gotcha. Why do you think that is? Why are they more call heavy than email heavy?
Well, it's all about the buyer, and it's all about how do you find the buyer. And when you're dealing with a small business, they're typically run by mom and pops. And because they're run by mom and pops, they don't have a huge workforce working for them, which simply means when you call the business and someone picks up, it's very likely that the person picking up is the decision maker. So that's why in small business, it's easy to find the decision maker through a cold call.
Gotcha. And then the 30 to 50, you know, emails that are, these are follow-ups, are they, you know, what does that look like?
Yeah. So typically, you know, small business owners running around all day, they're not typically in front of a computer that much, and they're often not even that tech savvy. So if you send them emails to try to make sales, it's going to be pretty hard to get in front of them. So most of the emailing that's done in small business is to confirm an appointment, it's to send out a proposal, it's to try to connect in another way, but it's typically not going to be done to generate an appointment.
Gotcha. Okay, so we're talking, you know, the majority of your appointments are going to be coming from cold calls in this case.
The majority, correct, yeah.
And then, so that shifts a bit when we move up to mid-market, right?
Yeah, so when we start moving up to mid-market, there's going to be less calling, and that's for a couple reasons. Number one, you need to be a little bit more strategic. You need to be a little bit more educated because now you're transitioning from more of an emotional sale to a logical sale. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. And mid-market opportunities are more tech savvy. The business people working at these roles understand likely what a tech stack is, understand what a sales stack is, understand what A/B testing is. So finding them on the computer, essentially through an email, now becomes doable. So that's why it's added to the sales approach.
Gotcha. And then with enterprise, you're really focusing on, you really ramp up your email and you're doing fewer calls. Talk to me about why fewer calls.
Yeah, well, with enterprise, you know, anytime you call enterprise, you're probably going to be dealing with a huge phone tree. So it's so much harder to get through to everyone because of the additional barriers that the enterprise company is utilizing in terms of their infrastructure. And when you also look at the way that the buyer likes to interact, a small business owner loves picking up the phone and just talking for 5 minutes and hanging up. But an enterprise buyer, they like thinking about their content. They like reading an email and analyzing the value props. They like seeing things in writing. They just operate differently. So not only are they sitting in front of their computer, not in front of a phone, but the way they digest information is also different, which is why you apply a different strategy.
Gotcha. Now, when you're talking about different strategies, is it just calls and emails for these enterprise guys?
So with enterprise, there's definitely another thing that gets added to the sales process, and that's in person. So typically, you're going to see at an enterprise sale, you're going to see conferences, and you're going to see salespeople going to those conferences to try to make connections. So typically, in person is also a very big part of a sales process for an enterprise sales role.
Gotcha. Because I think one of the trends that we're seeing across here is, you know, it really, the amount of money that you can invest in acquiring a customer is directly related to, you know, the revenue that they're bringing in. You know, I see a Absolutely. Lot of people talk about they want to have a 3-to-1 ratio. They want to bring in 3 times more revenue than it costs them to acquire that customer. Right. Is that held true with the way you see things?
Yeah, absolutely. So typically I see as low as 3-to-1. 3-to-1 is also when you have a really healthy business and it's considered kind of the minimum. I've seen some companies go 5-to-1 and I've seen other companies that are more heavily based on service go 10-to-1. So absolutely 3-to-1, 5-to-1 is a good range. And when you're dealing with huge enterprise clients and the deal sizes are so large, it makes sense to spend $1,000 on a plane ticket just to go talk to a prospect.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so we've got a rough idea of like, this is how the playbooks differ. I imagine your tactics change when you're, you know, approaching SMB versus enterprise. Talk to me about, you know, how do you see that? Where do you start?
Yeah, so you start with the psychology of the buyer and you really try to understand what triggers they have in life that are making them make decisions. So first from a very high level and then we can dive deeper. A small business owner's priorities is probably putting food on the table for their family. The decision maker at an enterprise company, respectfully, they probably vacation a lot. They might even have a second home. So they're not necessarily worried about putting food on the table. They're worried about their business appearance and their ability to continue to maintain that lifestyle. On a small business owner, they are worried much more about the day-to-day. And because of that, it's a much more emotionally driven sale. because they're constantly thinking about their family and how independent their family is going to be based on their immediate actions. So small business sales is typically much more emotional. You're going to be communicating, not necessarily always in value props, but you're going to be relating a lot of the opportunity back to how it will impact their family.
Gotcha. Can you give me an example of one of your, an SMB sale that you've been involved in that was a bit more of an emotional sale?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a great privilege of working under Scott Lease for a company called Main Street Hub, which was recently acquired by GoDaddy. And we were selling to small business owners, people who owned restaurants, boutiques, things like that. And one of the most common things that we realized is that a lot of customers would have to reschedule, no show. And when we called them, they said, oh, sorry, I was taking my kid to class, or I had to do this family thing. And they're not even in the mode of like rescheduling emails. It's just not how they operate. So what we would have to do, for example, is we would have to very politely educate them on the correlation between not taking meetings seriously or scheduling meetings and not showing up and how that actually impacts their family. In terms of asking questions like, hey, I know you said you wanted to grow your business, or I know you said this is a really big year for you. Do you feel like an increase in communication, or do you feel like if you were a little bit more proactive in your business approach, that could actually help your family be in a better situation? And that would just be a tough conversation that we would have to try to connect with this small business owner.
Was that something, was that related to what you were selling to them? Or was that just related to the process?
Yeah, that was really just related to the process. I mean, what happens in life in general, and specifically also with these SMBs, because of the emotional component of it, is a lot of people have goals, but not always do their actions match up to their goals. And that's why, people hire coaches in general. But with SMB, it's a lot of life coaching. It's a lot of showing them that their goals and their actions aren't nearly matching up. And you have to find the person that can recognize that and that wants to make the change. And that's how you start to convert an SMB client.
Gotcha. Because you're not necessarily always working with the most experienced business people. These are, like you said, mom and pop shops. So they're typically, from my experience, they're practitioners that really love their craft, that have decided, hey, I don't want to work for somebody else anymore. I want to go into business for myself because I love what I do.
Right.
And they don't, some fail to realize that, there's a big difference between, being the best woodworker at large company X and running a woodworking business.
Yeah. And you touched on a great point. They didn't necessarily start the business to become crazy rich. They started the business because it was their passion. It was their love. And there is definitely a place for passion and love in business. But if you're trying to increase numbers, typically you're going to need to apply an operational approach. So naturally, that's why there sometimes can be a disconnect when dealing with that type of decision maker. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying it's definitely an emotional sale, but there's also a bit of an educational component to it because they can be less experienced. I know there are plenty, SMBs or small businesses that have, worked for larger companies, have tons of experience. So I don't want to paint them all with the same brush.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I would say too, very respectfully, I have parents that run service-based small businesses in the healthcare industry. And respectfully, if they wanted to be a mid-market company, their decisions would probably be also different, right? Mm. So they're not even thinking in that mentality of trying to hit a growth rate. It's more so about maintaining and keeping the lights on and making sure, again, food's on the table from week to week. And absolutely, this is a generalization, so it doesn't apply to every SMB. And I personally have talked to a lot of small business owners that are extremely business savvy and are operationally focused. But again, we're just using kind of overlapping generalities just to drive home a few important points.
Mm-hmm. Just to give you a sense of like what your sales process or how it might change in general when you're going after these SMBs. So to put a pin in this one, we're saying it's a much more emotional sale. They could be less experienced buyers. They might be, they might not be, or less experienced sort of in the business world. They're generally going to have a love for their craft. So when you're crafting your sales pitch, your process for them, you can really play on those sort of elements.
Absolutely.
So how does that change when you go up market?
Yeah. So when you get to the next level, which is mid-market, things start to change a little bit because, I mean, the definition of mid-market changes for every company, mm-hmm. but now you're likely dealing with companies that generate millions and millions of dollars in revenue a year. And it's very likely a small business owner might not even be at the million-dollar mark. So when you're dealing with mid-market, you are starting to deal with people that are more operationally focused. So you have a little bit more of a logical based component to it, but it is right in the middle of SMB and enterprise. And the reason I share that is a lot of mid-market decision makers want to become enterprise. I mean, that's why they're making tens of millions of dollars. They're trying to get to 100 million, but for one reason or another, they're still a mid-market company. And the reason I share that is because oftentimes there is a small emotional component of them trying to get to the next level. Mm-hmm. So with SMB, you're not necessarily selling on how to get to the next level. You're selling on, you know, success of the family. With mid-market, it is a lot about, is this going to help you? Is this going to give you the opportunity to become an enterprise company? So there's a little bit of the emotion there, but then you have to apply the logic to help them see the numbers of how it can be, make them become a mid-market to enterprise company. Mm-hmm.
So there still is, it still is this sort of mix, this hybrid, because they're, and it sounds like we're talking about companies in the, like with an SMB, we're sort of sub $1 million. With the mid-market, you're kind of defining it as $1 to $100 million, roughly? $1 to $50 million in that range?
Yeah, and it, you know, every company has a different definition of what small business, mid-market, and enterprise is to them. Mm-hmm. But typically, yeah, if I think of like a local pizzeria, I mean, mm-hmm. they're probably doing $300,000 to $500,000 a year. And if I think of a mid-market company, you know, they're not a huge, well-known, big public company, but they're definitely bringing in millions of dollars. So the exact definition, I would say, really varies on the company, but those are our fair estimate for the ranges.
Yeah. One thing that we've seen is that we've experienced personally is in that sort of that $2 to $10 million range seems to be where there's like a struggle, right? Where the company is, they're big enough to be a real business, but they're not quite big enough to have everybody they need to run the business.
Sure.
And where like... you get above $10 million, you start to see companies really start to be fleshed out with directors, VPs. There's more of a hierarchy. Whereas mm-hmm. in that sort of $1 to $10 million sweet spot, you're going to see individuals with multiple roles and people are going to be, it's almost harder to get time on their calendars because they're carrying multiple roles. They've got lots of responsibilities. Everybody's, you know, a little bit overworked. And that just seems to be the nature of that sort of sweet spot there.
Yeah, it's very true. And it's because, you know, as we're saying, they're grinding so hard to become that huge $50, $100 million company. And, you know, they have a clear vision typically. They know where they want to get to. They're just being so scrappy and working so hard to try to get to that goal. And as we all know in sales or in business, you know, it's a very fine balance. Once you know your goal and you start sprinting towards it, sometimes you get caught in the day-to-day activity and you start, you know, spending more energy focusing on the outcome instead of the process. And I think a lot of mid-market companies fall into that. And that's why we see some of the habits that we're discussing now.
Can you give me an example of a company focusing on the outcome instead of the process?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if I would name them by name.
Yeah, that's but cool.
Yeah, totally. So this was a company that was acquired by another company. So I was working at this company. It was acquired by another company, and they were on the East Coast. They wanted to expand operations in the Midwest, which went well, and they wanted to expand operations on the West Coast. So I came in to help them on the West Coast. And they said, okay, well, we just need to generate sales and we just need to generate revenue. So let's do a bunch of hiring, let's do a bunch of spending, and all of a sudden that'll create sales. Mm-hmm. But what they failed to realize is that penetrating a new market that already had a fairly established competitor in the market, a very well-known household brand, is going to require a lot of strategy. And the strategy kind of fell by the wayside because everyone was so obsessed with the outcome. So they said, it doesn't matter what it takes. Let's just throw some time and some resources at it. And things failed for a while. And we realized when we took a breath to look at what was going on, that there was just some very basic blocking and tackling from a strategic standpoint that we weren't doing because we were just trying to accelerate our timeline for success instead of focusing on the small actions that we knew in hindsight, if we built the pyramid, eventually we would get there. So hopefully that wasn't too vague. I'm happy to dive deeper, but okay.
That was good. It sort of points to kind of, I think, what was your next point on, you know, selling into the sort of mid-market, right? Like you said, it's still an emotion. It's still a bit of an emotional sale. It's also a logical sale, but what you're driving towards is they're able to make faster decisions because they're smaller. They might not have that sort of inflexible bureaucracy that you would at a $100 million plus company. There's no Sarbanes-Oxley that they have to adhere to. There's no ISO, you know, hopefully there aren't too many, you know, regulations and things that they have to go through. I know. Yeah. You laugh. I definitely sold into government and, you know, larger companies where the procurement process alone is 12 months.
Oh, right.
So these mid-sized companies, do you find they tend to move faster?
Yeah, they absolutely do. And just to also share this data point for the previous market, small business sales, usually 0 to 2 weeks is the sales cycle. When you're dealing with mid-market, you're likely looking at a 2 week to 2 month, probably 3 months is the longest it's going to take a mid-market company to make a decision. Hmm.
Gotcha. And just a result of they're moving fast. They tend to be able to move faster. You know, we're talking smaller budgets. So they're just able to mobilize cash a bit faster.
Less decision makers. Yeah. It's a smaller budget. I mean, it's $500 to $2,000 typically if you're dealing with subscription, and there's just less decision makers. And it's the combination of there being less decision makers and still emotion. You know, emotion makes you make decisions really quickly, which is why in business, typically when someone, you know, myself included, when I get really emotional, my first thing to do is calm down my emotions so I can think clearly and try to understand why my emotions are there. But yeah, it's a combination of less decision makers involved and also a combination of the emotion naturally accelerating the decision making.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the types of decision makers that you're going to see in, like what sort of job titles are we looking at here?
Yeah. So for mid-market in general, the higher up you go up the market, the lower the title is going to be. So in mid-market, you're likely going to be dealing with the executive team. You might be dealing with senior managers in the terms of VPs. So you're probably dealing with vice presidents, maybe senior directors, but I would say typically you're going to be dealing with a vice president or someone of that level.
Okay. And then as we shift and we move up to enterprise to sort of compare and contrast these two,
sure.
What is that going to look like?
Yeah. So once you're going into enterprise, I mean, these companies are doing $50-100 million. They don't want to bring in a heavy hitting salary to make a $3,000 monthly decision. Mm-hmm. So typically a title as low as a senior manager would be controlling a budget. So if you go to a big public company and you're trying to sell into that company, oftentimes a senior manager, maybe a director, but a senior manager and a director are going to be the ones actually controlling the budget. So that would be the title you're often going after.
Gotcha. And how are your tactics going to change when you're going after these enterprise buyers?
Yeah, so when you're going after an enterprise buyer, it's a lot more operationally driven, it's a lot more value driven, and it's just a lot more about the numbers. When you're dealing with an enterprise buyer, they understand the concept of evaluating multiple vendors. They understand the concept of trying to maximize ROI. And that's really all they're focused on. They're not focused on if they're getting a paycheck. They're not focused on getting to the next level. They're just focused on creating efficiency with what they already have. So because of that, you're going to be using a much more data-driven, value prop-driven approach. Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to paint the enterprise companies all with a bad light, but in my experience, selling to them, well, it does take, you know, the deal sizes are definitely larger. There are more it's a more complex sale because there's just more buying influences in there. But one thing that I've noticed a couple of times, and it totally is going to vary from sale to, or from company to company, but it's something to keep your eye out for, is looking at, you know, what are their personal priorities and what are their professional priorities, and how do those change? You know, based on what they're trying to accomplish. I've seen individuals in large organizations make decisions that you could argue were bad for the business as a whole, but are going to help this one individual, you know, hit their goal, hit their target, hit their quota, hit their, you know, their metric. Right. And so it's just an interesting thing to keep an eye out for. And they're definitely all not like this, but I think in larger companies, you get more into the health of the individual, can take priority over the health of the organization. Whereas with an SMB buyer, the health of the business is the health of that individual. Right? That's one thing that we've seen sort of change is that the two can become disconnected, and there's multiple sort of stakeholders that you're, you know, everybody's going to have a different set of goals, including the business.
Yeah, it's a really great point. I mean, if you just think about it from a bird's eye perspective, from the numbers, if you're a small business, you're doing, you know, whatever, hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe a couple million, whatever it is. If you're an enterprise and you're a senior manager, your business unit might do $10 million, mm-hmm. right? And you might have peers that are managing business units of $10 million. So it becomes much less about, okay, how do I help this public company go from, you know, 50 billion in value to 100? And it becomes more about, how do I make sure my business unit of 10 million continues to be successful? And because of that, a lot of times it can be more about maintenance. It could be more about just making sure the bed is made, so to speak, than actually focusing on how it impacts the overall company. Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things, and you don't find them in companies too often anymore, but are those the sort of budget windows where if you don't spend them this, if you don't spend your budget this year, then your budget's going to shrink for next year. Those were always my favorite to find. You know, have you ever seen those before or ran into that before?
I have. Yeah, it's such a crazy concept to me, to be honest. I mean, but then it's also hard to judge, right? I mean, at a certain point, you're just so big that it's hard to pick and choose how much time you spend on different things. But yeah, there are definitely these unique cases where, you know, people feel, this is what they say, if I give you a budget and you don't spend it all, apparently you didn't need the full budget. So why would I give you the same budget next year if I could allocate those resources somewhere else? Yeah. So you'll definitely run into low-hanging fruit where someone has essentially disposable income to throw at a test. And that can be a great opportunity for the right rep.
Have you imagine any good stories from finance sales like this? Can you give us an example?
Yeah, this will be kind of a weird example, but I'll apply it from venture capital. So we were recently raising, we raised and closed on six-figure checks, so hundreds of thousands of dollars, exact same process. There's gatekeepers, decision makers, there's boards that have to sign off. And really one of the things that I noticed through going through that process is that everyone has a certain amount of deals that they need to do for the year. Mm-hmm. And everyone has their own plan that they have to hit that says, unless I'm spending this much money, I don't even have a chance to see this return. So I actually noticed that the higher you go up the food chain, the more likely it is that someone's just going to have disposable income. And yeah, so it's not an exact use case from when I was going into a company, but I see raising capital as the same process as an enterprise sale. It takes just as long. And yeah. That's an interesting pattern that I noticed there.
Well, because if you think about from, you know, the venture capitalist or even the, you know, the senior manager at a large company, their job, you know, the job of the organization is to plan how they're going to use their cash. And they want to make sure that they're getting the right. best ROI on their cash. The worst thing you can do as a large business is have cash sitting in your bank account earning you interest. Right. Like
right.
unless you're a bank and that's your business model, you know, generally you want your cash, you want to put your cash to work. And so that's when that's why you sort of assign these budgets. And I'm not going to comment on, you know, whether it's right or wrong to take people's budgets away if they don't spend them. You know, I think there's arguments for and against.
Absolutely.
But it's just interesting to see. It's one other thing to look out for when you're selling into these types of buyers.
Yeah, that's definitely a very, very good pro tip for anyone out there.
Yeah. So I got one last question. You know, you're founder CEO of Always Hired. We didn't really dive into what that is. So this is my new favorite segment where I get to torture the guests just a touch. I didn't actually tell Gabe we were going to do this, but this final segment here is called Cold Call Me. So you can get your pitch in, but you have to basically do it in cold call form. So I want to hear if you're dialing up a prospect, you can set the stage however you want, but okay. So who am I? And then do ring ring and I'll answer the phone and we'll go back and forth here. We'll give it a try.
Okay, cool. You're a hiring manager, HR, VP of sales, depending on the size of the company. I'm selling HR talent and I believe you're in charge of hiring.
Okay. My name will be Bob in this just because I think it's a fun name. Okay.
Cool.
It's on you. Ring ring.
All right.
All right. No, you got to do ring ring, not me.
Yeah. Okay. Ring ring.
Hi, this is Bob.
Hey, Bob. I'm not really sure who to talk to over there. I was hoping you could point me in the right direction.
Sure, Gabe. Happy to help you. Although I don't know your name is Gabe. So sure, man. Who is this?
Yeah, sure. Sorry. I thought my caller ID would have come through. This is Gabe. And you said this is Bob, right?
This is Bob.
Bob, nice. I was just on your website and it looks like you're hiring for a bunch of salespeople, but it looks like you still have open slots and the roles haven't been filled. Is that correct?
Yeah. We've been trying to hire a couple account execs and it's just, it's challenging in this market.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I've been talking to a lot of people here also at like Salesforce and LinkedIn and everyone keeps saying it's challenging in this market. What did you mean exactly though? What do you mean it's challenging in this market?
Well, for the type of salesperson that we're looking for, it's tough to find people with experience that have the relevant experience in the markets that we're looking for.
I get it. So that makes a lot of sense. You're saying it's hard to find people with the right experience to bring them in. So does that mean you're doing a fair amount of interviewing? You're just not getting anyone that's the right fit?
That's right. We've got a bunch of open recs to hire. Mm-hmm. We want to hire four or five. We've hired two or three so far.
Got it. Okay. And if there was a way that you could do the same amount of interviewing that you're currently doing, but you could actually raise the quality bar of those interviews, are you saying that that would be one solution to look at to try to convert new hires?
I'll be generous here because I just met you, but yeah, that sounds interesting.
Well, I'm not sure if you've heard what a lot of these big companies are doing. Companies like LinkedIn, companies like Google, well, they're actually starting to utilize recruiting sources that are focused on quality, not quantity. They've been able to hire at least 3 to 5 people per month. Have you been keeping up with what any of these companies' kind of new hiring strategies are?
No, we haven't.
Okay, it's probably because we didn't drop the press release yet, so not a big deal. but the reason I thought it would be appropriate to connect with you is because Always Hired has been working with these companies, and what Always Hired does is we source, screen, and train sales talent. So basically what happens is people come to us saying they want to work for you. But before they go and interview with you, we put them through a rigorous, full-time, in-person sales training to make sure that they know how to do sales, they know how to use a sales stack, and things of that nature. Does that sound like the type of candidate that could potentially be a good fit for your company?
Definitely. More qualified is always going to be better.
Yeah, and I was just curious, you know, I know more qualified and lack of quality can mean a lot of different things to different people. What was it about the people you were interviewing that made you feel they weren't right to convert to the next step?
Good question. I don't know. I wasn't directly involved in the hiring process. This is what I heard from my people because Bob here is a powerful man. He has many people working for him.
Well, Bob, I took a look at your LinkedIn and it seems like you've been doing this role for a long time and you've been very successful. So that makes
70 years actually. Yeah. I've been here a long time.
I missed that from your LinkedIn.
LinkedIn didn't even exist when I started.
Well, no wonder you and your company are so successful then, you've been doing this for a while. So yeah, this was a great conversation. You know, I actually have to run into a meeting. I'm sure you have to run too. Would you like to learn more about how LinkedIn and Google are hiring top talent to increase their stock every year, their stock value?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll just set us up with a product specialist. They're the ones working those accounts anyway, so they can see if there's any corollary principles we can apply from a use case perspective. How about we reconnect on Tuesday or Wednesday?
That sounds great.
All right, cool.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on the show, Gabe. This was fun.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. If anybody's trying to get in touch with you, where's the best place for them to find you?
Yeah, so on social media, they can find me at Gabe Moncayo, Instagram, Twitter, things like that. If they want to connect through the company, they can just go to alwayshired.com and reach out to us that way.
Right on, man. Thanks so much for coming on the show. This was fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Cheers.